Hey everybody, the Vern here, just jumping in here really quick before we begin this latest episode of Cinema Recap. I was gone helping out friends for several days, hence that is why this episode has taken really a long time to come to you. There might be a few audio hiccups here and there. I apologize. I kind of just rushed this episode really fast to bring it out to you for Friday. So yeah, apologize about this being late. This should not happen again. But anyways, enough of me rattling on. Let's get to John and Mark. Goodbye.
This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
For the latest in movie news and box office reports, welcome to the Cinema Recap Podcast. And now for your hosts, your friends and mine, John Bonham and Mark Jackson.
All right, and welcome back to your weekly edition of Cinema Recap. Got your weekly hosts, John Bonham, as always, joined by Mark Jackson. Mark, sounds like you're pretty much done with the winter weather in Ohio.
Yeah, I pretty much am, and it's not so much the snow. You know, the cold at some point just gets to you, and I can usually handle it, but it's all the external effects that come, you know, when you're dealing with the cold. You know, like my car, just she's been a great car for the years I've had her. But you know, I can tell that this winter is taking a toll on her, and it just takes a little more time sometimes for her to start up in the morning when it gets below 20 degrees or something. So, you know, we had a nice little respite of a couple weeks where it was, you know, 30, 40, you know, 50, pretty warm stuff, but no, this whole start of the week has just been miserable, and I think we've got a couple more days of that before we kind of get back and hopefully put it all behind us as we look towards spring. So yeah, I'm if you can't tell, I'm ready for it.
I think there's something to be said about there's weather where it's lousy and it makes you like want to go to the movies. You know, if it's like rainy outside, you don't really want to be, you know, outside, but it's not too cold. You can go to the movie theater for a couple hours.
Yep.
But I remember back in my Chicago days where it'd be like negative 15 and I wouldn't even want to get out of bed. Like I wouldn't want to go anywhere, let alone try to make it to a movie theater. So I feel like that's kind of what you're dealing with. And I know exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Thanks for understanding. And I think that's, you know, there's a lot of other issues we can get into why the box office is not performing. You know, there's not a whole bunch of really, really great movies that have come out this year. I do think we're coming on a turning point. But, you know, I think that's an issue you can't overlook. I mean, it's been very, very cold in a lot of places. And to get people to want to go to a movie theater, even if something that they're, you know, semi-excited for, I mean, you still have to, you know, get in, start your car, get to the theater. You know, I'm blessed that the theater I kind of go to fairly consistently when I'm not at screenings is like a mile away from me. But for other people, it might be 6 or 7 miles. And that's, you know, time mm-hmm. you got to traverse the snow or traverse the cold weather. And you got to ask yourself, is it worth it? A lot of times it's really not.
Well, if you're in a big city, too, good chance you don't have a car, which means you're either Ubering, you're walking, or you're taking public transportation. And in that kind of weather, I can guarantee you're not taking public transportation and you're not walking.
Right.
So if you don't feel like Ubering, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And you made an interesting point about the box office, how it's been doing pretty lousy for the last few weeks. And it makes me wonder, we get to a month like March where it's pretty stacked with Captain Marvel, Us, Dumbo, all features that we're expecting to put up pretty solid numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Why would studios decide to put all of those in the same month when they're essentially going to, you know, kind of eat away at the other one's numbers? Like January and February, like to be honest, just kind of sucked. There's not that much out. Why would one of those studios not bump their movie up, you know, a month earlier? And I'm not to put you on the spot. I'm not sure if you have any insight. I just don't. So I was kind of curious about it.
I don't. I guess I'm thinking maybe just semi-logically here. You know, January, February have long had a standing of, you know, being termed as dumpy-wary. And, you know, whether it's accurate or not, you know, there's just a stigma that, you know, 8 times out of 10, if a movie comes out during that month, it's probably not good. And there's many other reasons that we could probably get into as well. I think that's part of it. I do think, you know, part of it too, you could look into it a little bit, but, you know, when March comes, we're kind of slowly but surely coming up on, you know, the turn of a new year. I mean, technically that starts in January, but, you know, spring is like hope springs eternal. You know, everyone is kind of awakened from the slumber after, you know, winter, and, you know, hopefully by like mid-March, late March, everywhere starting to get fairly good weather. I mean, baseball's been, you know, going to pick up right around the end of March. So, you know, it is truly like, wow, it's a new day. It's almost like, you know, people are getting reborn. So I think, you know, maybe whether intentionally or not, movie theaters might see that. And like, we need to kind of put some of these really semi-big movies, let's put them in March. You know, we maybe could do more business in February or January, but at the same time, you and I just talked about, well, maybe people aren't going to go out if Mother Nature's not cooperating. So maybe just right. Implicitly by March, you know, you're banking on fairly good weather. You're banking on, you know, people starting to, you know, get kind of set into the new year, and hoping that, you know, your movie might get more of attraction if it's being positioned in March, as opposed to, you know, maybe kind of just being thrown away in January or February. Not to say we haven't seen big movies come out in those months, last couple of years, but I still think if you did like some empirical research, you would see a lot more bigger movies kind of start to, that maybe aren't true blockbusters, come out like March or April, as opposed to like January or February. But, you know, just elaboration, just talking.
Well, I mean, it's definitely very cyclical and consistent the way studios release movies.
Yep.
To the point where, like, Avengers is usually within a week of the previous year's release date.
Mm-hmm.
You see all the superhero movies get the summer releases. So what you're saying makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it almost might be worth it to risk it, you know, especially when you're competing with, like, a Captain Marvel type film.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a monster or potential monster like a Disney live action remake. But just some, you know, food for thought. Before we jump into real news, just really random trivia question for you. So apparently years and years ago, the popular time for movies, I think, used to be like more in the winter time, and the summer blockbusters weren't really a thing yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to this on a movie podcast a few weeks back. Do you know what the first, like, true summer blockbuster is considered?
I think it had to be Jaws. I would almost bet my life on it that it was Jaws.
Yeah, you're spot on.
I forget what podcast I heard, and I don't think it's the same one, but it might have been one a year ago, yeah, where they talked about how this really, you know, was the birth of a blockbuster movies. I mean, it did so much for, you know, really showing movie theaters, like, why aren't we putting our biggest movies out in the summer? Kids are out, you know, families might have a little more money to spend, etc. And yeah, I mean, I think that was the movie that, you know, rewrote a lot of the rules.
It sure did. So, well, you're one for one for trivia on the day.
Very nice.
Alrighty, well, with that, we'll go ahead and dive into some real news here.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone!
Not a ton, as you and I were discussing before we hopped on here. I think one of the biggest points that we saw is that Will Smith will not be returning for Suicide Squad 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is, just a really, really bad sign for a movie franchise, or potential franchise, that got off to a pretty weak start from a critical standpoint. It still put up good numbers because it had a strong cast and it had great trailers.
And it's Oscar winning.
Oh my God. What was an Oscar winner for?
I want to say it was best costume design. I could be wrong, but it was one of those technical categories, and it was that and like two other movies. I could do like a quick, you know, check here, but I'm pretty sure it was like best costume design.
I feel like if your movie's below like a certain percentage approval rate, you shouldn't be eligible for Oscars.
Best makeup and hairstyling, that's what it was.
Okay. So the Oscar winner, Suicide Squad,
yep.
Which was a critical bomb. Yeah, I mean, just after how I mean, how the first one opened, to be losing your main star, which was one of the few, you know, shining spots of the original. And there's a change in the director as well, right? David Ayer's no longer behind it.
Yeah, Ayer's no longer behind it. I'm trying to remember.
James Gunn took over?
Right, James Gunn, which, yeah, you know.
So makes... That might actually be a positive point, I guess.
No, I think so. I think, you know, James Gunn has definitely, you know, proven his aptitude and proven his skill in, you know, directing a wide-scale, you know, comic book fantasy-type movie. So I don't think that's the issue there. You know, with Will Smith leaving, I thought he was a really, really good Deadshot, you know, along with Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn. Their chemistry was really something tight. They did a movie before that, I think, in Focus, so they kind of already had something brewing there. The thing I heard with him was that, you know, he just kind of had a lot of a really busy schedule, and it was kind of impossible to fit in. And the departure, yeah, is due to scheduling conflicts, and the split is amicable. I mean, you know, maybe there's some other stuff going on there in the background, but I mean, I like to think that's probably the reason. I guess my main question is, you know, do you think that they recast it, or do they just bring in someone else to kind of fill that void?
You know, I got to be honest, I'm not very familiar with the Suicide Squad and the comic books that it's based on. So I don't know how relevant and, you know, important his character is. I'm assuming it's pretty important if they cast Will Smith in it. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure if, like, you know, cutting that character would be a huge disservice to, you know, to Suicide Squad or what. I would guess that they'd recast it, but... Yeah. I mean, who wants to replace Will Smith, right?
Right, yeah. You know, I do think he was, like, the epitome of what you could want for that character. And maybe I'm, you know, incorrect here, because, like you, I don't know much about the Suicide Squad. I really don't follow much comics. But he just felt like he was a really good cast choice when you kind of see some of the images, like, on a comic book panel. Like, you know, oh, yeah, I mean, he totally looks the part. And, you know, he sounds like how I envision this guy would sound, etc. So yeah, I'm with you. I would, at this point, I guess maybe I would probably just, you know, look into my roster and see, you know, who else could kind of be Will Smith Deadshot proxy. It doesn't have to be obviously Deadshot, you know, incorporated, but maybe go into your roster. I don't know if it's too late to recast at this point. But I would probably just, you know, bring in someone else and let that little chapter of the Suicide Squad, you know, die. And just pulling someone else from your roster. I'm sure it's pretty deep enough to do so.
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't think Will Smith did anything special. I don't think it's that deep of a role that another person play.
Yeah,
but I enjoyed watching Will Smith in that character. I was like, I'm enjoying watching Will Smith do Will Smith right now. It wasn't Will Smith doing Deadshot because I didn't know anything about the character. Right. So I really liked him in the role because I love Will Smith. So I would assume he could be replaced, but will we get as entertaining as a role that we had from Will Smith? My guess would be no.
Yeah, and I guess this is kind of semi-unrelated, but... One funny thing I read, it was funny to me at least, you know, some guy made a comment on that story on the site I frequent, and one guy said he should have taken the role because he's not going to be appearing in much after Aladdin.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, that might be one of those controversial, I guess, his role slash the entire movie of the year, which it just... seems like bad PR so far, so
yeah.
I mean that could be pretty accurate, who knows, but yeah, time will tell.
That's right, 2 months away.
Another piece of news that you and I were going over, and this isn't anything apparently too new. It sounds like it's been going back and forth in regards to a sequel to Edge of Tomorrow. It does sound like they locked in Doug Liman to direct it again, you know, direct the original, and they're in the process of working to lock in stars Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt once more.
Yep.
I guess Cruise and Blunt are just waiting for a script that they approve before they sign on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of torn on this one. I think they look at the movie as one that did pretty strong critically. It didn't put up huge numbers, but I think it's one of those ones where people see it on TV now, they watch it, you know, maybe it put up pretty good streaming or rental numbers. And now they're thinking, all right, we've got the fan base hooked into this now. Now we can make our blockbuster out of this idea. That's what I would guess that they're thinking, because normally when a movie puts up those kind of numbers, you don't see a greenlit for a sequel.
Right.
But I don't know. I really enjoyed the first one. I like Lyman and Cruz and Blunt, especially all three of them together. So I'm on board for this.
Yeah, I would definitely, you know, watch a sequel for sure. I had a really good time with the first one. I'd say I liked the first two acts more than the final act, but I mean it was still a really, really good time. I guess my concern is, you know, Cruise's bread and butter right now is Mission Impossible, and it sounds like they have two more movies to get to before they'll probably tie a bow on everything, and I have to imagine he would probably want to do goes before he even thinks about Edge of Tomorrow. So if you kind of just start doing the math, if it's 2019 now, we could still be a couple years away from, you know, this kind of hitting theaters again. I would say I wouldn't really expect anything till 2022 max. Because, I mean, when is the next Mission Impossible coming? Is that next year or 2 years from now?
I think it's 2021.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, and obviously a star can still do, you know, multiple things at once. I just feel like for kind of what he is asked to do in Mission Impossible and what he probably will do, Edge of Tomorrow is a little more, you know, CGI, and it doesn't rely so much on, you know, natural stunt work. But still, it's, you know, maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, it's probably like mid-tier, 4 or 5, 6 on it being physically demanding. So I still feel like we're probably going to get it at some point. It's just going to take a little while because all the focus, I have to imagine, on Cruise and, you know, the people who hold the IP and the power of that Mission Impossible property, they want to get these last two movies done.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to be aware of, A, just how old Tom Cruise looks, and B, physically, if he can keep putting himself through this. So, I think you're right. They probably want to shoot these movies, maybe even back-to-back, just to get the entire thing wrapped up.
That's what I heard. Back-to-back could be an option. I don't know if it's confirmed yet, but, I mean, I could see him just doing it, and maybe there's, like, a cool, you know, two-parter there, like, almost like Light Avengers-like, where, you know, you're tying up everything, and, you know, you've got part one kind of ends on a cliffhanger, then you kind of end everything in part two. But I don't know. I could definitely see him shooting back-to-back, though.
Yeah, that might be the smart move. So, yeah, really up in the air on when we'll see, you know, the official sequel. But, I mean, they got to sign the guy on first to begin. So, and was there anything else that we wanted to talk about on the real news, Mark?
I don't think so. I guess this is a quick snippet, but I was reading something about Jessica Chastain. You know, she's going to be the main star of It Chapter 2, along with James McAvoy. But, you know, she went on a talk show and they started chatting about how, you know, one of these scenes they have in there is going to be potentially like the most bloodiest scene in horror movie history. And, you know, that's kind of a tough thing to say. I mean, you have to run through all the horror movies to see what exactly would – how would you even quantify that? But it sounds like, you know, this is probably going to be a little bit more intense than the first. The first one had some really good scares, but I have to think now, since, you know, we're dealing with full-on adults here, maybe that that stigma of we can't really show too much because these are still kids, that's been lifted. Like, they might just, you know, go in and do whatever they kind of want to do. And I haven't read the book. I've heard, though, like one or two areas where I don't even think they're going to do in the movie, but there's like very controversial pieces that they could pull up in the Stephen King, you know, part two novel or the second part of that novel that, you know, would definitely raise some eyeballs.
Okay. Well, I mean, God, man, the first movie had such a bloody scene when,
I guess you're right. You know,
whatever right Chastain's the younger character when she's in the bathroom and it literally gets the like floor to ceiling covered in blood.
Yeah, I remember that. That was an unforgettable scene, and I guess even the first 10 minutes, I don't think it's a spoiler or anything, but, you know, the Pennywise just comes out and, you know, completely mangles, you know, Georgie's brother's arm. So, you know, maybe I'm you know, not giving quote unquote enough credit to how much they didn't care to harm children. But it sounds like, though, since everyone is of age now, it sounds like they're just gonna, you know, throw all no caution to the wind, all caution to the wind, whatever phrase you want to say, and you know, not hold anything back.
Yeah, I imagine that. I mean, it's gonna be the you know, the how all sequels need to one up the original, so I imagine that it's going to be no holds barred, and the shock factor will be through the roof.
Right.
But yeah, excited for that one coming out later this year.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, I really liked the first one. You know, I didn't think it was perfect by any means, but definitely had a lot more of a really, you know, creepy kind of uneasy vibe than like that 1990s one. I know some people live and die by the 1990s one, but to me, like, yeah, this one, I feel like it got a lot of things right and really capitalized on, you know, this whole nostalgia piece everyone kind of likes. So, but I'm even more intrigued with what they're going to do and how they're going to end in chapter two, because I should probably try reading the book, but, you know, at this point, I haven't read it, so I think I can wait a couple more months and just, you know, see how the movie turns out.
I mean, it's like 1,000 pages, isn't it?
That's you're probably right. I feel like he has some really meaty novels. Not all of them, but I feel like a lot of them can get kind of pagey. But he's like one of the few authors I feel like his work always translates fairly well to a big screen. So I don't see any reason why this can't be at least, you know, good. It's the same director who's going to be doing it, and some of the kids are returning, but you've got pretty good, you know, core names that have hopped on: Bill Hader, Jessica Chastain, and James McAvoy. So I'm all in.
Yeah, me too. I cannot wait. I think it. I imagine it should be the, you know, horror blockbuster of the year, maybe right up there with Us. But yeah, should be good.
Yep.
All right, and with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up the real news, and let's hear about some friendly podcasts of ThatMomentIn.com.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hello, everybody. My name is DaVern, and I am the host of the Cinema Recall Podcast, which you can find at ThatMomentIn.com. On each episode, myself, along with a great guest, we will discuss in detail an iconic scene from a classic movie. So come check us out. We are available on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and most other places you can find podcasts. We are also on Facebook. Just type in Cinema Recall. And we are also on Twitter at @cinema_recall. We hope you enjoy the show, and thank you for listening.
Hi, this is Tony, the host of the Flix X-Raid podcast. Each week, I am joined by guests.
Ew.
Hello.
Yo.
Why, hello there.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
And we have a roundtable discussion where we dig deep and X-ray a bunch of our favorite films and some really terrible ones, too. We really like to go back and take a look at films that may be forgotten, maybe in the past, and still lovable films. If you want, you can follow us on all the major platforms: iTunes, Google, Stitcher.
If you want to find out more, you can find us online at www.flixxray.com.
And you can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram if you want to reach out to us. Good night, Internet.
Alright, and we're back with Cinema Recap. We've got John Bonham and Mark Jackson here. And we're going to go ahead and do the box office recap of the top five in just a second. But before we do, Mark, you were able to make it to a movie that was just outside the top five, coming in at the eighth spot, which was Greta, with just under $4.5 million. So why don't you let us know your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, so, you know, I think we talked a little bit about it last week, but Greta is essentially a story of this, you know, young woman played by Chloe Grace Moretz, who's kind of trying to make her way in New York. She's moved from Boston. She lost her mother about a year ago, and she wanted to get away from her father. She's living with her best friend, played by Micah Monroe. And, you know, she's a waitress. She commutes to and from, like a lot of people do in the Manhattan area. And one day she finds a handbag on the subway. And, you know, she was able to find the address of who it belongs to. She returns this handbag to an elderly female by the name of Greta, played by Isabelle Ruppert. I think I'm saying that correctly. And, you know, they build a nice little friendship. Both are kind of missing something, trying to fill a void. So, you know, they kind of find that within each other. But, you know, slowly but surely, Greta kind of starts to reveal herself. And before you know it, that friendship has ceased to exist. But, you know, a friendship only stops unless kind of both people want it to. So the rest of the movie is, Georgie, that's Chloe Grace Moretz, trying to get away from Greta and, you know, stop her advances. And it gets very, very twisted. It gets very, very just kind of bizarre. And, I thought it was fine. You and I talked a little bit about this before we got on the pod today. And, you know, one of my favorite genres unabashedly, if anyone's kind of been following me for a couple of years on the origins of my site, MovieManJackson.com. I am a sucker for, I don't even know if there's a correct name for it, but I just like to coin it as the psycho stalker genre. You know, it started with Play Missy for Me. My dad turned me on to that, when I was like a freshman and a sophomore in college, and I was kind of starting to go through some of those scenarios sometimes. So I got exposed to that, but I mean, I like that genre. It's kind of like my reality TV, you know, where some people love Jersey Shore and Temptation Island and, you know, the Kardashians and stuff. For me, it's a genre that it can get pretty slocky. It can get kind of trashy at times, but, you know, I just find enjoyment in it a lot of times. There's definitely some bad movies, like Jennifer Lopez did one a couple years ago, The Boy Next Door, and there's some other stuff that's just been – it can get – when it's bad, it's very, very bad, but – a lot of times it's entertaining, and I always kind of live by a hard, fast rule with these movies. I think they're as good as their villain or the person who's playing the villain. And it's not the performance has to be it has to be very kind of measured. You know, you have to kind of see something in there from the start, like, okay, this person, I know how it's going to end up. This person is clearly off the rails, but that you don't see that all right away. So it's very gradual. Like, they're still believable enough, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think you make a really good point when you said that, you know, these kind of movies, they need a really strong villain.
Yep.
When you look at the horror genre, you really don't look at it and be like, man, in this movie, the heroine or the hero, they had such a great acting role and they were awesome. You look at it and you're like, man, Hopkins and Silence of the Lambs or Javier Bardem and No Country for Old Men. Not that that's a scary movie, but, you know, it's certainly a villainous role. And without that, you know, the movies can kind of collapse on themselves. So what kind of villain was Greta? Was she one that, you know, you were fully behind and gave a great performance?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think she's the reason why I would, you know, slightly recommend this, or at least, you know, people to give it a watch when it comes out on whatever streaming device or, you know, Redbox. Because her performance is very engaging. It's very it's fun. It's a good time. And it feels like it's very in tune to what the movie wants to do. At times, the movie can feel like a little more like a drama, especially like the first 30 or so minutes, and it's kind of incongruent with how the rest of the movie goes. But once the rest of the movie kind of commits to being, you know, a little schlocky and very B movie and campy, I feel like she is very, very dialed into what the movie wants. It's, in my opinion, it's a very, you know, very memorable performance. When I say memorable, I'm not talking about, you know, Oscar level or anything, but it is a very memorable performance. And, you know, just coming back to, you know, how, you know, these type of villains, they have to still be real, but they have to kind of show enough red flags to know, okay, I mean, obviously this person needs to stay away, but you can kind of see, okay, it's a little easy to get pulled into this person's trap. Jessica Walter did it really well in play Missy for me. A person that didn't do it well was that movie that Jennifer Lopez was in, A Boy Next Door. The issue I see with some of these movies sometimes is the villain will like be completely normal for like the first 30 minutes, but then as soon as something happens, that switch flips and they're like completely comical or completely a caricature. And it just seemed like there was no progression whatsoever from, you know, methodical madness. It just, there was a switch that flipped, and then, you know, they're this crazy, you know, all encompassing quote unquote deity. And I think those movies never do well because there's just there's no rhyme or reason. You can't really see the craziness slowly but surely start to, you know, become more incremental. It's just there's a switch that turns, and they're crazy because the switch calls for it. So with her, though, you could see from the start, like, yeah, she's a little off her kilter, but she's still believable. She's still normal, but there's just enough red flags to, you know, to get your hair up on your arm. So that's my takeaway. That's why I feel like some of these movies are good or better than others, because the performances are kind of dialed in, where other ones, they just feel like, well, I've got to be completely normal here first, and I've got to be completely crazy. And, yeah, hopefully that made a lot of sense. But with this one, it was, I recommend it just enough because she had a really good performance, and it's a good time, and you'll laugh a little, you'll get grossed out a little, but you know, she goes for it, and I think that's a huge thing that a lot of these people playing the villains in the roles have to do too. They have to go for it, but again, they can't just like flip a switch. It has to be very methodical, so when they finally do turn, it makes sense.
Okay, like a slower transition into the craziness.
Exactly. And I guess just to compare it to another movie I saw that falls in the same genre, I think it was maybe 2017, and I want to say Katherine Heigl was in it. Unforgettable. Also another, you know, bad psycho stalker movie. She plays the villain, and it just, again, it just felt a little too over the top, and it felt like there was no nuance at all to her character. The best movies in that genre, you know, I feel like they have nuance, and the main villains have layers, whether they're females or they're males. That's just my opinion. And I feel like I've seen a lot of them, everything from Play Missy for me to like Swim Fan to obviously this movie here. So I like to think I'm relatively well versed in that genre.
Yeah. Is Greta kind of like a Misery type flick?
It's got some levels of that, some flourishes of that with Kathy Bates. I would say so. It goes in a direction, kind of the final act, where I could see some parallels to Misery. Not to that level, of course, but it's got a little bit of that in it for sure.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like a worthwhile watch, so I'll be keeping my eyes open for it once it's available for streaming or for rental. And with that, we'll go ahead and dive into a quick run-through of the top five.
I'm putting the burden of lousy movies back on you. It's very simple. If you stop going to bad movies, they'll stop making bad movies.
Uh-oh, the jig is up.
Not a whole lot of change. A few movies dropped down a spot from a new release that just came out, but I'll just do the top five with the domestic gross for this past weekend. But number five, we've got Fighting With My Family with 4.6 million. And I think it actually just opened in the UK and was number one over there, which no real surprise, big UK cast. Number four, The Lego Movie 2, the second part, down one spot with 6.6 million. Alita Battle Angel is number three with 7.2. We've got newcomer Tyler Perry's Madea Family Funeral with 27 million, which we talked about this last week. These movies, they seem to, you know, kind of have a niche that they play into, and they always put up pretty strong numbers. And it's, you know, it's kind of been a cash cow for Tyler Perry, who you and I agreed is a guy we'd like to see, you know, get some meteor roles out there. He's good in, you know, some different ones like Gone Girl and Vice. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, like Tom Cruise, he's got to keep doing Mission Impossible. Tyler Perry's got to keep doing the Madea. But I think you said this is his last one, right?
Yeah, I think he's ready to retire this character. So, I mean, at least he's going out with a little more cash in his pocket. It doesn't surprise me that it got to number two. I am a little surprised that it got to $27 million and it almost challenged, you know, How to Train Your Dragon for number one. I would say maybe $20 million max is what I would have went with. I would have thought maybe settle around 15, but yeah, you know, obviously he's built a pretty strong following, you know, for those movies, and, you know, people who like him or, you know, have fun with them, go out and see them. And people who don't, like you and I, they don't. And that's totally fine. I am happy, though, that it sounds like he's fully committed to, you know, at least doing other things, maybe exploring some other directorial avenues, etc.
Yeah, it definitely put up stronger numbers than I was expecting. I don't know if people thought, since this is his, you know, like swan song, they'd, you know, come out for it and, you know, get one more theater experience with him as Madea. But yeah, it came 3 million short of How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, which remained number one with 30 million. And I would bet my life savings it will be its last week in the number one spot.
I would definitely do the same, sir.
And the reason being is because there's really only one major release next week. And there's one other one I was actually reading about. Why don't we start with this one? Because I didn't know a lot about it. What do you know about The Kid?
I do not know a lot about The Kid. While you pull that up, I've just kind of looked at it a little bit. I'll probably get his name wrong, but I know he's in a lot of stuff. Vincent D'Onofrio Law and Order, Criminal Intent fame. He's done a lot of movies over the years, too.
Looks like he's directing character it. Actor.
Yeah, but Ethan Hawke's in it. I think he's your favorite. And, wow, Chris Pratt and Dane DeHaan. He's a really good character actor, too. Interesting cast.
I know. I saw Ethan Hawke. Well, Chris Pratt is what really caught me off guard, but premise is a young boy witnesses Billy the Kid's encounter with Sheriff Pat Garrett. I think Ethan Hawke plays Pat Garrett, and Dane DeHaan plays Billy the Kid, which I was really surprised by. I thought that would have been Chris Pratt's role, so I'm kind of confused on why he's in the movie, unless him and D'Onofrio are friends after being in Magnificent Seven together, and maybe he just asked him for a favor.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about this until I was looking at what's coming up this weekend, so I'm kind of intrigued by it. I'm going to be watching the trailer as soon as we wrap things up here.
I might have to give it a look-see, too, and I really don't, you know, care for trailers too much. It looks like it's going to be a pretty limited release. I wonder if that means that, you know, it'll be out maybe for a week and, like, quote-unquote wide release, but maybe come out on VOD immediately after. I guess, though, I don't know how it could do VOD, just because, I mean, you've got like a pretty good cast, and, you know, Chris Pratt's a superstar. I feel like, you know, anything you kind of would release with him in it would at least get a, you know, a token release. But I mean, 250 theaters is not a lot of screens at all. So I'm curious to see what this looks like. I mean, I'm guessing not a lot of people know about it. This is the first time I have heard about it, and I like to think I'm generally up to speed with, you know, what's coming, even some of the smaller things. So, but this caught me off guard. So I can't imagine it doing a whole bunch with that level of screens. But, you know, if it you know, ridiculously, you know, outperformed its like theater average, whereas, you know, like out of 250 theaters, sometimes you'll have all of them, you know, stuffed to the brim. Maybe it'll get more of a wider release. I'm curious. I just didn't know this was coming or this was a thing.
Yeah, I've got to imagine it's a passion project. I can't think they're going for, you know, big money with this one by any stretch.
Right.
But, I like the people involved, so definitely one that I'll, you know, give some research to. But without further ado, Captain Marvel comes out next weekend. It's going to blow everything out of the water. There's no question about it. It is the last Marvel movie getting released prior to Avengers Endgame. So even if you're not really high on the trailers so far and you don't know anything about the character, like myself,
Just the fact that it's A, a part of the Avengers series, and B, might have some tie-ins to Endgame, which I think you and I were kind of discussing as our main interest, is maybe just like watching the post-credit scenes. So I don't know. Again, this isn't one that's looking like it's going to be my cup of tea. It looks a little too weird and like space alien-esque for me. But I'll still give it a try, and it's going to just put up monster numbers.
Yeah, what are you feeling as far as prediction-wise? Give me a number.
I'm worried. I'm going to be, like, way under.
Yeah, and I really, really put you on the spot there.
Man, like 90 million maybe? But that could be, like, 30 million under what it does.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, I'm trying to. So everyone remembers Guardians of the Galaxy came out like 5 years ago, and no one could really peg, you know, what that would do from a box office standpoint because no one knew anything about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
And I'm not. I'm not a comic book movie geek. I don't know if Guardians of the Galaxy has more clout or less clout than Captain Marvel. I'm not exactly sure. I imagine though there's like a little more awareness for this movie just because if we compare it from, you know, when this is going to be released versus when Guardians is going to be released, then you know that movie's. But I don't know. I was kind of hovering around that 90 to 100 million. I will say. I'll go a little high. I'll say 97 million. I do think people are you know, relatively starved for like a blockbuster, and if it's got Marvel tie-ins, it could be, you know, bad, but it would still do massive. I would say pretty massive numbers on the first week. I don't think there's a ton of crazy weather coming up in the forecast that could, you know, prompt people to stay home. So I'll say 97 million, and you're gonna say 90 million.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm kind of torn on this one because I was trying to think, like, what kind of numbers Wonder Woman put up. And Wonder Woman put up 100 million five in its first weekend. And on one hand, Wonder Woman is a more well-known superhero than Captain Marvel is, I think it's fair to say. On the other hand, Wonder Woman is involved with the DC Universe, which has been doing poorly, and Captain Marvel's involved on the Marvel side of things with Avengers, so it's got a little bit of a stronger backing in that regard. So it's kind of tough to gauge which direction this is going to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I could see it definitely easily clearing over 100 million, but I could also kind of see it, you know, maybe underperforming a little bit and people, you know, go with like, I don't know, 85, or I don't know if it'll get like as low as 80, but for some reason I feel like it could just as easily be like 85 million as it could, you know, 100 million plus. So I'm very interested just to see like, you know, what it does on a performance level, box office wise.
Yeah, absolutely. It could, you know, it could put up 120 and I wouldn't be shocked. It could put up 70 and I wouldn't be shocked. Unless this movie comes out and puts up like 150, I'm probably not going to be surprised with the final number.
Yeah, I think I'm with you too. What did Black Panther get to on its like opening weekend?
130-ish?
Maybe. It was high. There's many different reasons why. It just, to me, and I could be wrong, maybe I'm not in all the different, you know, social media avenues and stuff. I just don't feel like the excitement, the fever pitch is as high as it was with, you know, with Captain Marvel as it was with Black Panther. You know, I feel like Black Panther, once that first trailer hit and, you know, you've got all the ship coming into Wakanda and you've got the great music in the background by Run the Jewels playing. Everyone was like, you could talk almost anyone, anywhere. Like everyone was pretty hyped for that trailer and that movie. But with this one, it feels like I feel like there's more people who's just like, all right, it was good. You know, I don't feel like there's as many people are saying, wow, I this is amazing. Like, you know, I can't wait. I think they're going to watch it because it's Marvel, and they're interested. It's out of habit, but I just don't feel like that fever pitch is the same.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, and I think I was drastically off on how much Black Panther opened to. I think it opened to like 240.
I was gonna say something like 188, but I just remember it made some wild, crazy, unfathomable amount. 200. Yep, you're right. 202 million. I think that's what it opened at. Yeah.
Yeah. Good lord. So a little off on that one. but yeah, that's pretty much all we got coming out next weekend. No surprise that not a lot of people want to contend with Captain Marvel at the box office. So as we wrap things up today, one of the things we started to add in is just trying to get a little bit, give a little bit more insight into mine and yours personal movie preference, which we're going to do by putting each other on the spot with a random question every week, and we'll switch back and forth between who answers it. So, Mark, I believe you had a question lined up for me.
Yep. And this kind of falls into today's theme of, what we talked about a little bit. But, John, I would like to hear your top three all-time favorite psycho stalker movies. I guess you can go a lot of different ways in that. I guess the only stipulation I would put is you can't use something like, Freddy Krueger or Michael Myers or something. It kind of has to be something along the lines that I already went in depth in regards to kind of like one of my soft spot favorite genres. I'd like to hear if you've got any favorite, all timers in that genre that would fit for what we talked about earlier.
Man, I'm trying to think of psycho stalker movies. Would Silence of the Lambs count?
I think it would count just enough. There are pluses and minuses for why I would maybe go another route, but no, I think at the heart of it, you got it. Anything like Fatal Attraction or Fear or something like that, where it's just like something happens and one person will not stop until he's with her or they're dead and they're together. That very tragic in some ways type
story. Oh yeah. You know what movie that I liked a pretty good amount that came out not too long ago was The Gift.
Okay.
Which Joel Edgerton directed, Jason Bateman starred in, and gave a very non-Jason Bateman performance.
Yeah.
I think Rebecca Hall might have been his wife in that one.
Yeah.
And, just a solid movie through and through. Had a nice twist at the end, kind of like a sick, disturbing twist. It was a very different role than I was used to seeing Edgerton in. He's usually a very clean-cut, normal hero-type role. And he's this super creepy stalker in the movie, and he just killed the movie, Kind of a low-key film that I wouldn't have been surprised if it had nabbed a few random Oscar nominations for. So I really enjoy that one. This movie isn't fantastic by any stretch. But I got to give a shout out to De Niro for his stalker role in Cape Fear.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen that one?
I've not seen that one, sadly.
Oh my gosh. He packed on like 30 pounds of muscle for it. I think he had a dentist like mess his teeth up for the movie. He paid a dentist to mess his teeth up. He had this really like creepy, disturbing Southern accent that he developed for it. Again, the movie did not age very well, but his performance in it is fantastic. Oscar nominated. Scorsese directed it. Random movie trivia about Cape Fear is that originally Spielberg was going to direct it. Scorsese was going to do Schindler's List, and they swapped movies.
Huh.
So just a little tidbit.
I'm gonna have to give this a watch. I've heard about it from time to time, but I've never committed to watching it. And I feel like it'd be kind of right up my alley. Kind of maybe a little trashy, but also a really
trashy.
Good. Maybe a really good performance. Okay, interesting. I didn't think you're gonna go there, but wow, okay, and even got some Academy Award nominations. Interesting, huh?
Yeah, indeed. Last one I'm going to go with, and this probably doesn't really count, but I'm a huge, huge sucker for Kevin Costner. So this will just give a little more insight into my personal movie preference. The movie The Bodyguard, Terrible movie. Complete guilty pleasure of mine because I love Kevin Costner in it. But Whitney Houston gets stalked in it, which is where Kevin Costner comes in. So it's more of a love story than a like, psycho stalker. But big Kevin Costner guy.
Okay. I remember this movie getting like tons of Golden Raspberry Awards, like for worst actor and worst picture.
It's not good.
I've never seen it. I just remember the Hitman's Bodyguard movie kind of played off of that poster, but I haven't seen it. Maybe one day I will.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Just to check it off the proverbial list. But okay, interesting list. I definitely have probably watched more of these movies than you have.
I've seen tons of them,
and I feel like anytime they even come to the box office, I feel like I'm just obligated to check them out. So you can even run through some of the obscure ones, and there's a shot I might have seen it. So I mean, when I bring up Swim Fan, I was 12 years old when that movie came out, but I remember wanting to watch it, and I finally got to watch when I was like 14. So that kind of gives you some insight into me really, really liking this genre.
I hear you. I'm more of like a slasher movie monster type horror fan. So I think I probably need to take a few of your recommendations into the stalker side of things.
Yeah, I will make sure I definitely leave you just with like the really, really good ones. I wouldn't want to use the word legendary, but the ones that people usually always frequent when you're talking about these. So some point if you ever want a recommendation or two, I'll at least give you a few that maybe aren't so readily known.
I'll take you up on that. All right, I think that'll do it for this week on Cinema Recap. Mark, anything you got coming out this week we can expect?
Yeah, I've been putting it off for a long time, but I finally got to rewatch it last night. So the what to watch that I was kind of secretive about that I'm going to get to hopefully by some point this week is Major League. It's baseball season. Major League is one of my favorite baseball movies of all time. And it might just be one of my favorite movies ever. I think it's, the comedy is perfect. And, the actual, though, the story, there's a lot of heart in it. It's like there's romance, there's redemption. I think it's an awesome movie. So I will be kind of probably writing a little bit about that, hopefully within the next couple of days in the What to Watch piece.
Oh, man, I'll keep my eyes open for it. I'm a lifelong, diehard Cleveland Indians fan, so I could not be in more agreement with you that it is a tremendous movie outside of just the sports realm.
Yeah.
All right, well, sounds good. We got something good to look forward to, and otherwise, I think we'll probably both try to make it to Captain Marvel this weekend and chat about it next week.
Yep, at the very least, I'm pretty sure, unless hell freezes over, we'll both get to Captain Marvel, and we'll at least have some things to discuss.
Well, hell might actually freeze over in Ohio, so we'll see what happens this weekend.
Fingers crossed that it doesn't.
Alrighty, well, we appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll catch you next week.
Alright, take care, guys.
Cinema Recap is a proud member of That Moment In Podcast Network. Find all your favorite shows over on the site thatmomentin.com. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, Player FM, Radio Public, Stitcher, Podomatic, everywhere. Just search That Moment In. Thank you all for listening.